oh my goodness, that's why we just constantly got a new plan, and man, it's kind of like cool. We got my people and we're gonna fight with tools, cause we pick up the microphone or the hammer, use it to build up something, cause you know I don't damage your property unnecessarily unless it's kind of exploiting me. I'm all about sabotage in the right place in the right time, but man, my mind doesn't wrap around smashing small business owners' mind. Livelihood, what the fuck, no good, talking about these crazy ass provocateurs that just want to make us look like a bunch of fools. Nah, really, we freaking go and rules these schools when we need to, or all kind of workplaces having lots of fun, cause you know we freaking go faces face to face with the criminals. They're in the corporate boardrooms and all the different places and the banks and stanks of janks. Oh my goodness, man, I think they're in like the tanks. I don't believe in the military as heroes. They're kind of like the exploiters, colonizers for these yo's, prophets. The prophets of the freaking Halliburtons and all them. Fuck them. Do that one again or want a different one?
You get us a different one on there.
It was kind of poppy, but good.
Yeah.
I'll leave that or should I?
You go ahead. Lead us in.
Well, let me tell my little here story about how Martin Luther King ended up a gory, splattering on a wall. Hella freaking sad, man, I'm mad that that guy never got to be a great granddad. He should have been all up in the freaking future. What would Obama be like if you heard your 50, 60, 70-year-old king talking about the way that justice kind of still rings true? Ooh, it would be so simple, but instead he got popped over there like a pimple up on the balcony. Such a shame. Walking with the sanitation workers was his last game, but he was planning all kinds of good things. He was going to march on Washington with the multiculturaling, a multicultural gathering of folks, every single different poor folk. Everyone knows that it's all about the poverty and not really race, but the race gets used to justify our place in society, so I don't believe I go anyway. Oh my goodness, lyrical eye, what you got to say?
What do you even say? They made a movie called Selma, and everyone is gonna see it. But wait a minute, we still got a voter right problem going on in the world today. People can't even vote without their IDs. Seems like the things they were fighting in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, the 80s and the 90s and the 2015. We gotta run around like we wanna conquer our dream. And Martin Luther King said it before they had Martin Luther King Boulevard. In the worst communities, you will walk down them. We still killing one another. We gotta help one another. Get it just together. Instead of us talking about money and gold, we used to be about just the story I'm told. But we used to sit just the back of the bus. Thanks to Rosa Parks, we sit in front of the bus. And we don't have to even stop no more. We go in like we should overcome. We overcome unlike the mountain. It's been a long time. And some people say, why do you worship Martin Luther King holiday? I worship it because I'm black. Forget that. I just worship it because I love life. And every time you stand up for the mic, he had something to say before they killed him. Yeah. A federal holiday, the federal government killed the man. Now they worship him. A federal holiday, don't make no sense. But Stevie Wonder fought for that. Gotta give love for Stevie Wonder because he fought for that. And everyone that's listening to my words is off the top of the brain. But I'm giving love to the king. He reigns supreme.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hey, yo, he reigns supreme, and I ain't after no cream, because, you know, capitalism is ruining everything around me, and it's astounding that people ain't figured it out yet. It could be so simple, but instead we got the neglect in our head, and we got the knee in our back, and we don't understand why it is that we don't get jacked into the future or plugged in or anything that could be good. Instead, we end up fucking rotten like a pile of wood that got left outside for many years, and now we got to get up and build something. Here's the problem. If you don't got a solid foundation, how the hell are you going to be building up something that's going to be worth constipation? I mean, shit, what could it possibly be other than the fact that it seems like a hypocrisy? I'm taking back the radical king, and you don't find me wearing no freaking blood diamond ring. I'm like a different man and I sing a different song, so please let me stand tall and let me just be my own, even though it might not be the one that conforms to the norms. I'm kind of like down with that, because you know what, I scorn everything that I'm supposed to be as a typical man. You know what, fuck that shit, I got a new plan. I'm deprogramming all that crazy madness I put in my my head. Aw, damn, yeah, that's right, you heard what I said. I ain't satisfied with what I'm supposed to be instead. I'm a man who's growing every day. Oh my goodness, my head is like so complicated as it could, should be. Maybe I'm a little bit confused like Cookie. This crazy like white chick over here looking at the TV. Oh my goodness, such a pity. Oh my goodness, we could be so different. But instead, watching the Kardashians and goddamn Twitter's it. 140 characters, huh? LOL. BT dubs. Or something. Fuck it. Got a few more seconds left if you want to hit this again, but it's kind of on the outro. Alright. BT dubs. We'll go to the next one.
We'll give him one more.
Really? You got 30 seconds? You got 30 seconds? Here.
Shh. Nah.
Come on.
Let it ride. Let it ride. Let it ride.
Fear of Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. Call us up if you want, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. If you're listening out there and you wanna rap with us, I'll put you on the phone. You can rap through the phone. Oh, shit. I dare you to rap in the phone. Or not. Or not, I don't know. What's this one? Legit, or you should try this other one?
Try me. Give me that one.
This one's like slower. Should we get classic? Do you want to get classic here?
Get classy with them. You know?
No, classic.
Classic. Okay.
It's hella fast, but I think
all
me and you can do it.
All right. Okay. Go ahead.
This is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to lead or go?
Nah, you go ahead. Start it up.
Man, this is some big shoes to fill. On Martin Luther King Day, way back in, you know, 93. Oh my goodness, May, and my homie was like smoking my very first J. Oh my goodness, hey, back in the day, I was like 13 and I got a bit high. Why try to deny? It's been a love affair and I'm high every freaking day ever since. Oh my goodness, when I got a reason, that is cause you know I'm not smoking every day, all day anyway. Got to be intelligent about the way I play with the Mary Jane so I can maintain our beautiful relationship. Hey, it's been a wild ride and a wild ride and a child's side. Now I'm growing into a man's eye, but I still kind of use it as a tool to help keep my mind from being a fool and relaxing, stacking all kinds of maxing. Oh my goodness, damn, I love to be packing up a glass bong or a glass bowl. Roll it up, cause you know I'm down to puff a hole, J or blunt or anything. Vape it up, cause you know the concentrate's yum. When it's done right, alright, not down with the butanes, out of sight. No fossil fuel here, nothing but the solar. Oh my goodness, do it, cause I got a big ol' boulder of this delicious hash. Chip a bit off, put it in the bowl, now we're gonna get cough, cause you know we cough at all the different times, and now we get off and so high, and I don't try to deny, I love Mary Jane, why bly? I love this here plant, it could save the world, aw damn. Growing all kinds of industrial hemp, but they won't tell you about that. Instead, it gets demonized. That's some kind of crazy shit. Talking about the medicine, man, it could be so good. Growing number one industrial crop of the nation. Oh my goodness, replacing petrochemicals and the wood products and all the nasty shit that they use instead of a wonderful natural product. Oh my goodness, so beneficial to soil health and everything. No need for chemical input. Bring a weed to the crop and watch it flourish. Oh my goodness, just a little bit encouragement makes a plant grow so good, and you got fiber and cellulose wood. So many possibilities and nutritious, delicious. Ever had a hemp shake? Oh my goodness, great, so delicious. Wait, oh my goodness, we can make it with hemp like my boy over there with the Irish moss, getting hella fucking funky. Oh my gosh, and now I'm lost, a little too high, let my mind roam, even though I try to bring it back to the point of Mary Jane. Love it so much, and that's why I maintain, oh my goodness, this love affair, what seems oh so fair, is just another kiss from this pipe and my lips.
From the life that we live, would it give what we could? Try to breathe the fresh air. Love the unity every single day, but some of them don't care. Some of them will talk about what they want, but they don't really want to change. But we're trying to change. We even do what we gotta do by making sure we eat right. Cause if we don't eat right, we either do it with the chemical, subliminal. Everybody walking around like that, they say that I'm not just a lyrical. Every time I get on the mic, I bring it, down. You open up your third eye, your consciousness is live. How many kids gotta die before they lie? And I know every life even matters. We gotta nothing about their life because these kids are growing up and they're even dying too young. I want to tell them that they can live under California sun and learn how to keep the government on. But if they smoking too much, gotta stay sober for a little bit and start over and love yourself, taking care of the mind. Too many of this man have not even the love of humankind. I wonder if they're really gonna die in the world, if they're gonna teach the children how to change the world, if they don't want this. They hear lyrical eye, I've been freestyling for like 2006. We used to do it on the radio, I'm doing it now. And 2015, I'm keeping it live from 93. Gotta give love for hieroglyphics. Yeah, we been doing this on Pacific. Don't matter where you are, I'm keeping it going, cause don't matter in the age, I'm still just flowing.
Flowing, showing mad appreciation to my boy. He's knowing how to freestyle with the best of them. Well, then we might as well jump in, cause we only got another 40 seconds. And I gotta mention mad love to the hieroglyphics and then Souls of Mischief and everyone in between. Oh my goodness, we mean nothing but respect to the elders. Never neglect all your lessons, cause you know they did check all kinds of power and privileges just to give us the option to just do the shit, man. People be forgetting the lesson of the past. Oh my goodness, got a blast. Shout out to everyone producing hip-hop in the 90s. Dumb. It wasn't. It was intelligent. We were getting smart. We weren't going dumb. Back in the 90s, man. What's wrong? What's wrong these days? All right, that was goofy. That was awesome.
That was great.
That was badass, dude.
Mm-hmm. We'll give him one more.
You got to lead one this time.
All right, I'll leave one. This is going to be the last one for me, though. All
right.
You know, because, you know, give to be people too much. Give them a little bit.
Do you think this, right, or should I check another one?
Switch another piece.
Okay, let's get something hot.
No, I ain't feeling that one.
This is a sick one.
All right. You like it, I'll have fun with it.
This is bouncy.
Okay. Yeah. 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 You can make the world a better place if you can get up and love your even life. You can hear my lyrical eye off the freestyle so naturally when I started up. I was never afraid to get on just the stage. Forget if it was the stage, it was on the streets. I was burning the pages, kids were coming up to me. How do you freestyle with no cuss words? I was telling you, you got to read these books. Can't even need to follow these people that want to be like Catholic crook. They want to take over Hawaii. Hawaii was never yours, it would never be yours anyways. Gotta give the land back to the Lonely Trust. Oh, wait a minute, Santa Cruz, where they living? Trying to be something, but they want to lock us up in these prisons every year. And some people are not making it out of the county jail in Santa Cruz, trying to even make it a little bit of ends meet. You work 36 jobs till you get some meat, but they send your job into a third-world country. You wonder why you're working all you can, and your mother, she tried to teach you, but you didn't want to listen because your father wasn't there, and you on your own to writing these poems. But if I told you that was my life story, off the top of the brain, I was freestyling. Everything was so going cause I was so wildin', like I was a ghetto child. Used to be eating top ramens and pork and beans, but I don't eat top ramens cause top ramen gives you cancers in your intestines, and I don't wanna be manifesting this. So if you hear me on, you can hear my flow. It's so naturally that I pass the mic to San Nuno like we do 100 miles riding our bikes, yo.
Yo, you know I'm pedal powered and I gotta shower cause I got mad sweat now that I did not cower behind the use of a fossil fuel vehicle. I got my bicycle right behind me and I ride the thing every single day, bring all kinds of things in my messenger bag. Oh my goodness, I'm not sad that I ride cause my legs feel good and now my insides is really hella healthy, having lots of fun, and I ain't gonna be wealthy, but I'm really proud of that, the fact that I got a bike, and I ride it all night, and I'll ride it all day, and I gotta say hey to the people every way that I'm riding. I'm freaking styling, having lots of fun, and meanwhile I'm in a little bit of a different trip. Got mad love for the trip that I did with Isaac. It was over 100 miles to Salinas and back. Damn, that's like some crazy shit, Jack. What you gonna go ahead and...
And coming up next on Free Radio on April 23rd, it's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. We ain't rapping, but we is happening, so stay tuned.
Thank you. I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me naff. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle.
That's what happens with these old machines when the battery dies. But, as fate would have it, we have a second backup machine to conclude this particular number, so don't go away.
It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with you for 2 hours, as is usual, on a Thursday evening. And the phone number here is still 427-3772. And you can call in if you've got some breaking news, if you've got some thoughts on the show, if you've got some criticisms, you know, whatever you've got, you know, you'll stir me from my boredom at least if you decide to call in, if it has any relevance at all. And anticipating that may actually be happening. Who knows? Maybe yes, maybe no. Let's begin with a few, not so much street interviews as sanctuary interviews. In the once or twice a week sanctuary at the Red Church at Cedar and Chestnut. Actually, it's Cedar and Lincoln, sorry. And actually, it's more than once a week. The meal there, there are actually two meals a week at the Red Church. I think one is on Thursday, today, already happened, and one is on Mondays at 6. But there's also a noteworthy tradition and practice that Father Joel has of not only having organized a regular kind of shelter on a rotating basis with a small group of churches in the Associated Federation of Church Communities. Is that what it's called? The AFC? I may have something wrong there. But every night, I believe, people do crash on the edges of the Red Church. And if it's risky, because police can be called and they can arbitrarily give people tickets under the sleeping ban, there's some people that have permission to be on the property, written permission to be there, others who don't, but that Joel essentially says, as long as there's no problems, everybody can come there. Who wants to, if, you know, if until it becomes a problem, which, of course, can happen as the numbers grow greater, not because of any ill intentions of folks involved, just when you shove a lot of people together without the resources, you know, where a few control much of the land and the many are crammed into small spaces, then friction results and problems result. So, but Red Church is a place I go every Monday evening, usually, or generally, and I record people's thoughts. I went there to announce the the results of a Monday morning hearing that Steve Plaich and Judy Berry had regarding the stay away order law, and that's something I'll be talking about. Maybe I'll even get Steve Plaich to talk about it later in this particular broadcast. Stay away law is a pretty nasty law passed as a sop to bigots and gentrification folks and people who want to have mistakenly stigmatize homeless people as the cause of their problems. This used to be sort of centered in the downtown area with the merchants who habitually blamed their difficulties on homeless folks. But, and there's also sort of a culture war that's going on, too. One conservative segment of the community wants to repress and expel the traditional, at least for the last 40 or 50 years, traditional diversity in the community, with a series of laws that criminalize the most basic things, like sleeping, resting, sitting, and I guess eating is not specifically on the agenda in this community yet, but it is in other communities, and it is actually on the agenda in a sort of a secondary way through pressure on food providers to either locate to the edges of the city or to go indoors or to anyway, abandon public feedings that would show the community and the tourists and the regular folks coming over from San Jose for a boardwalk weekend really what's going on here. It's an attempt to cover it all over and make it very, very nice and Carmel-like and so forth. Anyway, let's begin with some interviews and perhaps your phone calls, 427-3772, and we'll see what comes. I'm expecting to actually have a guest calling in, a petitioner who wants to overturn the cannabis ordinance that was passed, the repressive cannabis ordinance that generally outlaws grows in the county with WAM, and there's now some confusion in my mind as whether it's just WAM that's allowed to grow. That's the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. Or it also allows three or four other favored growers to grow. And I'm going to try to get more information on that later in the show. Maybe we'll catch that in about an hour. But let's begin with Red Church restiveness and what's going on there. As people standing in line for food, I have a few things to say about what's been happening to them.
I might.
Let's see where we are here.
We're talking with Rusty. And you say all is well except for a certain first alarm security guard.
Yeah, Paul Blart.
And what about Paul Blart?
Oh, well, he's just a dickhead. He's coming around here and he's harassing everybody for no apparent reason. He follows people around for no apparent reason. He's taking pictures of people illegally for no apparent reason.
Now, what has he done recently?
So I'm catching some recording problems. I'm going to slip briefly to a little musical interlude, and then I'll be back. Don't go away.
Thank you.
seems like we're having a number of problems today. My apologies to you listeners. Could be a disc problem. This is a new disc from a singer that I used to play regularly about a decade ago. Her name is Phoenix, and she plays a beautiful harp, as you may have caught little snatches of. Let's hear a little more. That was Phoenix's latest, or at least the disc she had with her. She's A Celtic harp player that I was really pleased to play, as I said, 10, 11 years ago when she was in town. She's been traveling. I actually interviewed her, and I may be getting to one of these interviews, if not today, then perhaps on Sunday. She's a beautiful lyrical voice, and some of the songs are of her own composition. We'll perhaps hear more from her. Well, we'll definitely hear more from her during the show, at least in terms of some of these tracks, but maybe from about her experiences and her travels and so forth. You could find her downtown on Pacific Avenue, unless she's been driven away, wedged into one of the bracketed areas, which I've got to admit some people like. I don't, but that's... I don't know whether people get used to their prison cells and are grateful that they're not smaller than they are, let's say. But I don't like the idea of prison cells at all on the public sidewalk. I think that that's a real repressive imposition, and really an arrogant, presumptuous imposition on the community from special interest groups and people who have some sort of cultural superiority who feel they know what should be going on sidewalks. Which has nothing to do with public safety or order, but everything to do with their own aesthetic sensibilities. Anyway, let's get to the Red Church interviews and see what we've got there. I believe this is a Red Church interview, or shortly before. Let's listen in.
I might. We're talking with
Ross Dietrich.
And you say all is well except for a certain first alarm security guard.
Yeah, Paul Blart.
And what about Paul Blart?
Oh, well, he's just a dickhead. He's coming around here and he's harassing everybody for no apparent reason. He follows people around for no apparent reason. He's taking pictures of people illegally for no apparent reason.
Now, what has he done recently that's impacted you, if anything?
Oh, mostly just pictures.
And did this happen today? Or are we talking yesterday?
Yesterday he was taking pictures and profiling, even though that's not his job.
And when was this?
About noon.
And where was this?
Downtown Santa Cruz.
Any particular, was he here in front of this block, in front of Forever 21, or we talked about another place?
We're talking about down by Pergolesi's.
And what was the
So, in fact, this is a little before the Red Church interviews. This is on downtown at Soquel and Pacific.
Response, were you the only person this was happening to, or were there others?
No, there's plenty of others.
And, again, the name of the man we're talking about is?
Well, we call him Paul Blart.
And do we know his actual first alarm name?
No, he's just a shaved head first alarm.
With dark glasses.
Yes.
I may know who you're talking about, although I think I even got his name the other
day. He's the only guy that looks like Paul Blart.
And I don't even know who that is, so I'm in trouble, I guess. I see you're smoking illegally on Pacific Avenue.
Oh, of course.
Have you had any hassles for smoking?
Not yet.
And you look like you've been in about two or three different fights. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
No, because your right eye looks a little bruised.
Oh, yes, I got mugged on Pacific Avenue.
When?
During the last hip-hop show.
And was it night? Or?
Oh, yes.
And any more details?
No, I just got mugged by some out-of-towners.
Did they take anything?
Oh, yeah, $350.
Son of a bitch. And how long ago was that?
Four days ago about that, yeah.
So you're recovering.
Yes.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Free Radio.
Indeed. And you are?
I'm Ross.
Thank you, Ross.
All right. Thank you, Free Radio.
Thank you for talking to me on my radio. Well, we're on the street. We're talking with...
Panther James.
And Panther, you are playing an instrument. Let's hear a little of that, the music here.
All right.
Yeah. Now you've been known to be seen on the
spiritual.
You've been seen on the sidewalk with a piano in years past.
Yes, I used to have a piano that I'd bring out, do ragtime stylings.
Now you're wearing a lampshade that says happy birthday, but you haven't got a piano, and you have instead, what do you call this instrument?
It's a kalimba. It's called a kalimba. It's an African thumb piano.
Now, have you abandoned it because pianos are just too, I don't know, out of date? A kalimba is as old as a piano, yeah?
No, I just, this is what I'm working with right now. Still have the piano. It's in my storage. I don't have, the bus isn't working as well right now because I rolled it last year. So it's going to take a little work to get that going. But for now, we're just making do with what we got, and it seems to be working out.
I haven't seen you downtown much.
Yeah, I haven't been around, actually. I haven't been around too much.
But here you are again.
I am here.
Anything you've been a regular in Santa Cruz for how long now?
I would say a good 15 years or so.
Any changes you've noticed you want to comment on?
No, it seems pretty good. I mean, you know, there was a while there, was a point where it seemed like, you know, the blue meanies were starting to win, and then they kind of incorporated more culture again somehow and made it, you know, all the vending and the street performing, you know, it feels like kind of has more the vibe, you know, more the Santa Cruz vibe that we like, you know what I mean?
Now, you may have noticed, I'm sure you have, the bracketed areas that are colored yellow, red, and blue.
Yeah, I am over there.
And you're set up there next to New Leaf Market. What do you think of those areas?
It's fine. Because it's kind of confusing, you know, to all the rules they have, like with the feet and the spaces, and you have to, you know, be certain, you know what I mean, how it was, a certain feet from
14 the wall, feet from a kiosk, 14 feet from an intersection.
Trash can. Yeah, just, right. It's ridiculous, yeah. Right. So at least it makes it simpler. Now you can just see, okay, well, that's a designated area, you know, and as long as you just, play for an hour and then move to another one or something, I guess that's all.
That's the theory, yeah. Well, welcome back. You've probably been here all along. The first time I've seen you since you showed up in Felton a while ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. I'm back, but I'm not really back. I'm just kind of passing through. Santa Cruz is always going to have a place, you know, for me, my heart. So.
And we've been talking with?
It's Panther.
Thank you, Panther.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Can I? Again, and hopefully with some of her CDs available.
There is actually a CD. I did not bring them with me. I dropped them today.
How can people catch your music online, or is it?
Nope. Sorry.
Just on the sidewalk?
Yeah. I'm very technologically challenged, and I don't have, like, a computer or anything, so it's hard for me to manage something online.
Beautiful music.
This, of course, is the number that I played before, on the disc that I did finally get. Phoenix agreed to go to her car, her van, and get a couple of her discs. And we're going to hear some more of her stuff throughout the show. And a little bit about her life, which is coming up now. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org.
Music of Phoenix.
So here we are talking with a woman who's put down her... Is that a harp you have? What the heck is that?
This is the Celtic harp. It's a small one. It's only a 22-string, and they call it a Celtic lap harp, like a laptop.
Is that because you can't afford a bigger harp, or you're a diminutive person? You can't measure up to a large harp?
I'm definitely not a diminutive person. I'm quite large on the inside, kind of like a TARDIS, but I play a small harp because it's portable and it's affordable. I've never been able to afford a large harp, but I don't really want one either because I can't backpack it around. And this one stows in the overhead of an airplane, so I can take it anywhere.
Wow. Now, you were here a decade ago, and a friend of yours got a lot of tickets when he was here. And he didn't come back for... He actually is back at the same time you are. And he tells me all those tickets have disappeared. And he also tells me he finds this is a much better environment for playing than in the past, when he got many vending tickets. Although he did get a sleeping ticket last night, he tells me. How are people treating you here?
It's relatively okay. It still feels like there's a war going on against the homeless and people who have less money. But the laws have changed. We're allowed to vend art and stuff on the street, and that's kind of nice with the zoning laws, with the zoning zones. But they are still giving camping tickets to people, and I think that's unfair to criminalize the people who are less fortunate.
Now, I notice you also have a little stand next to your harp, which has bracelets, leather bracelets, and looks like pocketbooks. Those are your work?
Yeah, I'm a leather worker. I make wallets, cell phone cases, bracelets, and other leather jewelry, belts, and things like that.
Saw it on the... It's dismissed, right? The whole case?
And back to you, Phoenix. Have you been told you can't sell those bracelets for a fixed price? Have you been told you have to do it for a donation, or have you been left alone?
I haven't been bothered, except for I have been told not to stay in a place for longer than an hour. A couple times I've been told to move because I was someplace longer than the hour limit.
Is that because somebody needed the spot, or because some bureaucrat decided you were there for too long?
Probably because the person who was telling me this was a rookie and was just a little bit too on top of doing their job by the book perfectly.
Now, let's not be cruel to our rookies downtown. What do you think of the... anything else you want to add about your sense of this... the scene out here? I know I used to play your music a lot on Free Radio, and I will again once we get a copy of your fine disc, which you also are available here on the street sometime?
For now, I'm actually going to head east, and then I'll be back in early June, and then I'm going to up to Alaska to Anchorage this year. I'm a traveler. I keep on the road.
You're a traveling woman?
Yes, nomadic.
Well, what have you found in your travels? Anything you wish to reveal to us? Any truths that have come up?
People think that their problems are local. People think, oh, it's just me, or it's just my town that's experiencing this economic recession, or it's just me that's having a hard time making a living. But that's everywhere in this country. And I think that the more I travel in the United States, the more I get a bigger picture of how our country is economically and culturally. And traveling the world gives me a broader perspective on people, human beings, and what it means to be human. And I love traveling, and it enriches me a lot.
What have been the high spots of your travels in the last decade?
Last year, I was able to travel to Ireland. I visited the graves of my great-grandparents, which was really touching for me to be able to do that. And I played my harp all over Ireland, and that was fun, and I liked it a lot. So that was probably the highlight of my last 10 years of travel. It's going back to the motherland, because I'm mostly of Irish descent.
You learn any Gaelic tunes, Fred?
A couple.
All right, then. But we've been talking with...
Phoenix Harp.
Thank you, PH.
Morgan.
Morgan, you say you're a percussionist for a ukulele band, a singer, but you're also concerned about these bracketed, boxed areas on the sidewalk, which are required for performers to squeeze themselves into.
Exactly. That's what's making it hard, is you can't have everybody singing. You can't fit all your people in the box. So it's making us have to either have really small bands, or, I don't know, some people are getting away with it, like the High. Some people are getting away with it, you know, that little jug band that they have a lot of members and they don't seem to fit in the box, and that's okay.
You can go get a permit.
Oh, is that what they do?
I don't know, but it is possible to get a permit from Parks and Rec some days in advance, I think it is, although I'm not sure how many days right now.
And that's a one-day shot, a one-shot deal, right?
I believe so. You have to keep getting permits. Although maybe, I'd love, if you research it and you find out more, let me know.
I'm going to, now that I know this. I think it's worth looking into.
And what has been showing up with greater frequency in these interviews is the demands of police that people get selling vending permits for $33 if they are offering their artwork, and particularly their crafts, for display, for sale, for more than five or six times in a year. That's sort of the new thing that's been happening. And there's also been some concern among some of the some vendors, at least one or two, that these new spaces, these bracketed spaces, it's not that they're too small or too limited or too limiting, but because that they are actually providing a sort of a safe zone for semi-commercial folks to come in and sell stuff that isn't really handmade, or that is sort of a little bit out of step, if you will. If there is a certain rhythm to the Pacific Avenue, a former vibe of sort of handmade crafts, handmade artwork, or people who are just, you know, really needy folks on the sidewalk doing what they need to do to search out what they need to get in order to live. Instead, you have sort of commercially minded folks. There's always been people who, you know, are street vendors, and they do that in order to, not just in order to live, but in order, hopefully, to prosper. There's nothing wrong with prospering. Except in this society, of course, prospering tends to mean often selling trash at fancy prices to bored rich people, or, you know, folks who are desperately getting away from 9-to-5 jobs in order to gain a little peace over the weekend, I don't know, and some new diversion. Forgive me for my cynicism. So, the permit situation, I'm, you know, there is a permit process, I believe, that you can actually get a permit for a larger area for a longer period of time, but I think it's on a case-by-case, time-by-time basis. And for some folks, like the Marimba Band, which often plays in front of the Cinema 9, or at least I think weekly, or maybe it's twice monthly, it's okay, that process. I'm often a little critical of those folks who don't seem to be in much solidarity with the more spontaneous musical appearances, or even just public appearances of people who want to use public space, whether they're playing music or not. And I've always tried to broaden the solidarity between folks, instead of, you know, we're the musicians, you know, we're a special group. Those damn homeless bums, they're something else. You know, they're a lower class. And it's true that they're different people doing different things on Pacific Avenue. The question to me is, it seems to me, unless you respect the rights of everyone involved, they start picking off these groups one by one, and that, I think, is exactly what has happened. And there's also sort of a parallel story to that, which is that police favor some folks who are panhandling, particularly if, you know, I mean, a couple of women downtown can sit for hours in one spot, and there's no reason they shouldn't, but it's completely illegal, and not that it should be. The law sucks, and I'm glad that they're being ignored. but it comes to be a matter of police department discretion and favoritism, and we really arrive at the most profound and basic definition of the police state, which is where the police essentially make the decisions and the law does not. The law is simply an apparatus that the police use to proceed with their own agenda, their own will, their own sense of what's appropriate on Pacific Avenue. And I'm sure the police will probably tell you, oh no, we only act on complaint, and I'm sure that to some extent police activity on Pacific Avenue is complaint-driven. There's a hell of a lot of patrolling going on, though, I've noticed, and huge overreactions when there are incidents, and the complaints can come from first alarm guards and hosts, as well as from merchants or city council staffers like Julie Hindy, who filed a complaint against a fellow at the Forever 21 corner who was it's either a jewelry person, I think it was a rock jewelry person, claimed that this can't be your own work, this is commercial stuff. And she had the police write him a ticket, a $300 or $400 ticket. I don't know what became of that. That was about a week or two ago. I'm hoping to hear more about that. But what you have is you have an increased repressive situation that is fundamentally unnecessary. There wasn't a lot of disputing and fighting between people for spots. There was a street performers and street vendors code that was a voluntary code. And I keep reciting this like some kind of mantra, but I haven't really heard evidence to the contrary, although I've heard claims by city officials like Mike Rotkin to the contrary, a former mayor who's usually on the cutting edge of repressive legislation, with some exceptions, but not many. And is still dabbling in politics and dabbling in, the D-cell discussions and so forth. I think that's right. Again, I haven't heard much of him from him lately, but he's around. He comes to council meetings. The issue is crushing the counterculture, as far as I can see. The issue is driving the homeless out of town. And it's not framed in those terms. And for some, for those who are actuating and operating and putting into practice this policy, and we're talking about people like Scott Collins and Susan O'Hara, who are the staff who facilitate the meetings that create these laws, and then, of course, the police department and the Parks and Rec department then enforce these laws, they may even believe that they are simply maintaining order or dealing with bad apples or expressing the will of the community or just, if you will, following the law, which, of course, is an old excuse used by abusive police authorities everywhere. They're following the law. I mean, you see it when police defend themselves in trials when they've killed people. Well, this baton stroke is in accord with police policy number 43 and so forth. And therefore, we can't really say that it was an intentional killing. I'm going to be talking a bit about some of the recent stories that have appeared in the papers. There's been more exposure of the massive, persistent abuses, murders by police departments across the country, violence, cover-ups. And in Santa Cruz, we have the same problems. Not so graphic as in larger cities, not so easily visible as in larger cities. And, of course, the protests are far tamer against these things. I mean, you saw an example of this with the Bearcat protests, where people actually did come out. I mean, there are... one group, Food Not Bombs, led the protests, and then other liberal groups jumped on and co-opted the protests. Some people disagree with me on this and think it with the that it was all a joint consensus of groups that, other than Huff, my group that was excluded after originally being included as a part of the coalition. But the focus of these... The militarization that's going on is a really important thing to fight and to fight locally. And I'm hoping that's what we're all going to do, those of us who do feel that we don't want a militarized situation. We want to dismantle that. There's some who want to go further and talk about the intrinsic class warfare that is involved in the police departments, even if they are stripped of their military hardware. And that's important to discuss and important to understand. And I think it's the road I'm going down. And I'll try to explain why if I come to understand it more clearly in the shows ahead. So, getting back on track here, let's listen to some more stuff from the street. And I think actually we are going to make it to the Red Church. Before we do, let's get musical.
Cooking in the kitchen, Mama. Something's cooking in the kitchen. I don't know for sure, but I think it's something I've been missing. I don't know for sure, there's something I've been missing. Brother, brother, you know I'm not gonna tell you no lie. Brother, not gonna tell you no lie. Lately these days I wanna reach up and touch the sky. Lately I wanna reach up and touch the sky with my fingertips.
And that was the music of Kevin Robinson. On the air with me is Courtney Hansen, who is an activist with Sin Baris. Hey, Courtney.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. Cut the feedback here. You can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, sounds good. I know that I ran into you briefly at the Tuesday attempt to stop the Board of Stoops from fencing off the side of the jail to end protest solidarity. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and also about what's happening with you right now and today?
Yeah, I can talk about both of those things. So I'm actually at West Cliff right now. We're all still gathered out here getting ready to transition into a candlelight vigil. Since there's been a lot of speaking about the conditions, the reality of the conditions of solitary confinement in Santa Cruz, across the state and country, and we're out here by the lighthouse looking at the ocean for people who are locked up and not able to see it. And then on Tuesday, Sin Baris and a handful of other people were present at the Board of Supervisors meeting to see what would happen with the sheriff's proposal to build a fence around the back of the county jail. And so we spent all day there. We had spent the weekend delivering letters and making phone calls to express our concerns around the idea of this fence. The results were that the Board of Supervisors voted to go ahead and build the fence, to grant the nearly $48,000 to build the fence.
What was the vote? Was it unanimous?
Yes, it was.
I mean, go ahead.
And, you know, sure, it was disappointing, but part of our argument was that not only was the intention behind the fence problematic, but we actually... our theory was that the defense would be ineffective in its stated intention. You might be able to hear people chanting now in my vicinity. So we're not, you know, we were disappointed. We were disappointed at the Board of Supervisors' narrow scope of things, denying that this had anything to do with free speech, when Sheriff Hart specified in his proposal that this is related to incidences of protest. And so I don't think it will stop people from assembling when they really want to and making noise, but we thought we had to stand up against it because of its intention.
Now, you've been pressing for at least the last noise festival at the or march and vigil to the jail, or at least one of them, involved four demands on the county involving the building of another facility and ending solitary confinement and torture. Can you want to talk a little bit about any progress on those issues, or just at least remind us of those issues?
Yeah, so those are a couple different projects we have going on and that are still being developed. And speaking of that, on Tuesday there was also a report back about how Prop 47 is being implemented in Santa Cruz. So we also wanted to be present to hear about that, not just the proposed offense.
Tell people what Prop 47 is, and if you kind of give us a summary, said there.
Prop 47 is a piece of legislation that California voters passed in this most recent election. And what it does is change a couple different felony crimes over to misdemeanors. So this is something that people currently incarcerated can apply for and be affected by. And it's also something that is retroactive. So if someone is out of jail or prison, but they have a felony on their record, if it's a I won't get into the details, but the crimes being changed are crimes that were not sexual or serious in nature, but people can have their records changed because people are very much affected by that record once they're out.
What's been the impact in Santa Cruz County, at least both from your eyes and also in the eyes of the reports that the supervisors got?
Yeah, I can say a little bit about that. I would highly encourage that people go to the website of the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors and look at the agenda from this past Tuesday, and actually read the report. It was on the consent agenda, I believe, I don't remember the item number, but if you click that number, you can actually read the full report. It's really useful to see what's happening, and it's a piece of legislation that has potential, but there are also concerns. So we're working with other people in the community to make sure that the money saved from Prop 47 is truly redirected into community-based services that prevent incarceration. So a sticky part of Prop 47, it wasn't all simply great, is that 65% of the money saved through that goes to the Board of State and Community Corrections. And this is a body that has come out of realignment, and this is a body that has been funding county jail expansion all across the state. Susan Moriello, the Santa Cruz County Administrative Officer, is also a big actor in BSDC, who's been expanding jails. So we have a lot of work to do in Santa Cruz specifically.
You know, I'm concerned to some extent about the procedures of the Board of Supervisors. You just got wind of this thing, what, last Friday, a week ago, 3 days before, when you were, and you successfully, you and other groups fought successfully to stop Sheriff Hart from having, you know, given unbridled discretion to declare no trespassing zones anywhere he wanted around the jail. His deputy quickly hustled in February to explain that wasn't what he really meant. He meant just limited areas that were specified already. But this,
yes.
You had a couple of weeks to deal with that one. This one you had to deal with in 3 days, right?
Yeah. And I don't, like I've made pretty clear, we always have to wonder a little bit about the intentions of law enforcement and county supervisors as well. But in some of the phone calls reaching out to board members with our concerns, we were also told that this is a pretty normal timeline for things. Which I think points to a bigger problem with a quote-unquote democracy that working people and people of color have no accessibility to and no voice and representation in. So a place like the County Board of Supervisors is not our primary place of struggle, though when something like this pops up on the agenda, we will definitely show up and make our case known and make sure that they kind of feel that there are eyes on them and that we're paying attention.
What's new in the struggle for solitary confinement, which, of course, is your issue today out there on Westcliff? Where, how long are you going to be there for? Can folks still come out and light a candle, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we'll be here for another half hour. If people can't make it today, I would recommend folks come out. This is happening the 23rd of every month. 23 is to signify that at least 23 hours that people in California in solitary are kept in their cells every day. And so our next one in May on the 23rd is a Saturday, a busy, sunny Saturday in Santa Cruz. So we will meet by the boardwalk in front of the Ideal Bar right there in a high traffic area, and we'll be having a rally there.
Wow, that should put you in. Maybe you can educate the boardwalk security guards on as to what's going on.
Yeah, and if people want to hear more about, kind of on a deeper level, what's going on with this struggle, it is a prisoner-led right, a prisoner-led movement for human rights, and leading up to the next action, we will have a training where we can get together with folks in the community and really dig deeper and wrap our heads around this fight that's going on that we're a part of and kind of train people on how to talk to other community members about this, because people have all kinds of assumptions, false information they've been given from the media and politicians, and we really need to debunk that stuff.
Been hearing a lot about brutality in other cities by police and killings. It doesn't stop, you know. It started with the exposure nationally. It tended to start with Brown, at least most recently,
mm-hmm.
in Ferguson. But, you know, we're getting cops ramming people with cars, guys getting their backs broken and hauled away in police vans in L.A. and then dying shortly thereafter in jail. One of the main concerns you had in Santa Cruz was the privatization of medical care. Has there been any progress on that front or on any of the other specific fronts you were working on in the large rallies that you and others held, I guess, a few months back?
Mm-hmm. We've been doing a lot of kind of deep outreach and networking with people and meeting people who know a lot about the history of this county, who have been involved in past lawsuits with the jail, and are really knowledgeable on kind of what the nuts and bolts of the contract with this private medical company looks like. And this is a contract with California Forensic Medical Group, the private company that runs the care, if you could call it that, in the jail currently. So we've been wanting to boot them out, and there's a lot of momentum for this. They have a federal lawsuit against them right now, as well as lawsuits in basically every county that they're involved in. But we're also seen by this as a prison abolitionist organization. So we want people to stop dying in there. It's terrible what's happening, and they are clearly a problem. We think that if this company is not providing care, that there will be less premature death and less suffering in the jail. But we also don't want to boot them out and replace them with another private company. So we're trying to build relationships right now with people who are knowledgeable on what the care looked like prior to it being outsourced, and really formulate what our demand is going to look like to make something something that looks decent in there, but also at the same time be pushing to get more people out. So we don't want to just dress up the jail and make the jail a little bit more livable. We want to shrink the size and capacity of the jail. Our pre-trial population numbers went up again. So that's an example of something that can concretely be done, is people don't need to be sitting in our county jail when they haven't even had their trial or been convicted of anything yet.
What about your connections with other groups concerned about the jail, Friends Outside, and with people who are actually inside the jails? Has any kind of network developed there? In our particular jail?
I think as we're getting closer to really figuring out what it is that we want to be demanding around medical in the jail, and getting more people out and getting them services so they stay out, I think we'll have to have some community forums and gatherings to really bring all the actors into this and figure out how we can unite and work together. As you know, Simbadas is a totally self-funded grassroots effort, so we're kind of chipping away at it at our pace, but we really need to get everyone involved that does have knowledge, that might not be out in the streets, loud on a mic the way we are, or having noise demonstrations at the jail, but people that do have knowledge and do work with people directly affected by this, but we might not see them so much because the work they're doing is in different spaces.
We've been talking with Courtney Hansen of Sinbaras, and we've got another call coming on the line. I think this is another topic, but let me see if anybody has a question for you, or have you got to go? What's your situation like?
We're just lighting candles right now, so I should wrap it up. But
all right, let's see if this caller has a question for you. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert and Courtney of Sinbaras, who's out at doing a candlelight vigil in opposition to solitary confinement. Hello?
Hey, this is Pat. I was actually calling in to give you guys an update on the local referendum to try to stop the recent county board ordinance to ban collective cultivation.
I got you.
Time?
Almost. You want to hold, Pat, and we'll kind of conclude with Courtney, and or you can call right back. Take your pick. Which would you prefer?
I'll call right back in a couple minutes. I'm down at another meeting, so I'm a terrible caller and wasn't listening to the show, but I heard you guys might want to update.
No. You're doing good.
Five minutes
is good. Thanks.
Great. Well, I'll call you guys back.
Okay. And Courtney, so again, I guess my question was, people inside the jail, are you getting regular reports? Is there any communication or solidarity happening inside our jail that you know of, or is it hard to do, not happening? What's the story with that?
Oh, okay. I see what you're asking. People hear about our organization, the work we're doing, and end up getting in touch. I actually was on the phone yesterday with a woman who is currently in the county jail, and she has been locked up in there for 8 months pre-trial. So she has not been convicted of anything. And she's been sitting in there for 8 months, and she's really communicating that she doesn't know how much longer she can be in there, with just the harm every day and the stress and the, it's being treated like garbage, essentially, by people in the jail. And she's struggling with mental health issues. She has spent a lot of that time in solitary, and this is our very first time calling. Her friend, who is her only support on the outside, actually found out about Seambadis online and has tried reaching out to nonprofits, such as Friends Outside, and said he doesn't really feel like they're going to be able or willing to help him. I don't know enough about the situation to say yet, but I'm hoping to talk with her more, and we're going to do whatever we can to support this woman and help her get out in a timely manner, and anyone else that's struggling with this from there.
8.5 months, say, for a pretrial, huh? Say what?
Say that again?
You say 8.5 months for a waiting trial?
8 months.
8 months. Now, that means the public defender is what, sleeping on the job or amassing thousands and thousands of documents or just dealing with other cases?
Yeah, one of those. She said her public defender is terrible. The incident where she got locked up was actually had to do with her being in a state where her mental health was not okay. This is what happens to so many people. They get criminalized and swept up and then put in jail, and she's been sitting there for 8 months. And this woman's really fired up. She's really eloquent. She just wrote a letter on April 14th to the Sentinel about people needing resources, people who get arrested and swept up away from their jobs and families and unexpectedly. So I encourage people to check that out in the Sentinel as well.
Did she sign it with her name? Can we track it down that way? Do you have her name? Does she want that mentioned?
It was on April 14th. That's how I found it. Her name is Rebecca. I don't remember her last name.
And finally, I got a lot of questions, but we got callers waiting, and I just got studio guests and upcoming talk show hosts who just entered the studio. So let me thank you, Courtney, and again, advise people how they can come to the next Seambadis meeting or assist from a distance.
Cool. Yeah, thank you for having me. People can check out our website. We keep it pretty up to date. It's seambadis.org. And please join us next month, May 23rd. By the boardwalk out front of Ideal for our next action to end solitary.
Right on. And, you know, light a fire as well as a candle if you can.
That's the idea. If enough of us light candles, then we might.
Start a blaze.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you, Courtney.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye. And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to coming up soon is an interview with Pat, who is one of the people behind the initiative that's being passed around to overturn the Board of Supervisors' decision to severely limit or even generally outlaw cannabis grows in the county or reduce them to very, very small sizes. And we'll hear more about the specifics of that shortly. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back, and we'll talk some more. And you can talk, too, 427 I think 469-3119 is the number to call in on, and that you can do if you wish.
She left the city shy of 17. She said she had to learn to feel. Mama never taught the difference between right and wrong, she said. I gotta find out what it is for you. So cross your fingers, knock on wood, but just remember, put that thought up in the air. Gonna catch you right, gonna catch you right to paradise. So
and this is your mind. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hi.
Hey, guys. It's Pat again.
All right. So you're on the air, Pat. Is it Pat? Am I right on that?
Yep. P-A-T, Pat. You're right. And, yeah, I'd just like to say thanks. Pleasure to be on with you, Robert. I have, witnessed your activism from afar. My whole life.
Well, we'll see if you'd like it up close.
Yep.
Because I'm also a little unsparing in the criticism and the I'll be asking serious questions. Let me introduce who you are, Pat. And I appreciate the praise, sure. And let's thank.
So I'm a Pat Malo. I'm just a longtime resident. I got into the medical cannabis movement really officially probably 12 years ago when my dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he was given 6 weeks to live, made it 2 years. But I feel like knowing what we know now about medical cannabis and the its ability to, heal people rather than just treat their symptoms, all the way up to serious diseases like cancer, that's what inspires me to be an activist and a small collective gardener. And I'm also an amateur seed breeder and just a cannabis enthusiast in general. And I've been kind of following what the county has been doing as just a layperson for the last 2 years.
Pat, let me interrupt you. Pat, I'm going to interrupt you briefly and ask you, are you heading this initiative that will attempt to overturn the county's latest?
No, I'm not heading it. I'm one of a handful of board members of an organization called Responsible Cultivation Santa Cruz that is formed to basically run a referendum to stop the recent ordinance changes and at the same time run an initiative that we're in the process of drafting that will provide a good framework good rules.
Are you actually drafting or are you you're circulating an actual initiative that people are signing up for right now? That's what I saw yesterday.
So right now people are signing a referendum which
right.
blocks the county
okay.
recent ordinance.
I got you.
Right, so we're developing an initiative.
I see.
To then gather signatures.
So Pat,
we see it as. Yeah, go ahead.
What is now again? The name of your organization is Responsible
Cultivation Santa Cruz, or RCSC.
And you have do you have an online site people can go to?
Yep,
in case they
we have rcsantacruz. .org, and
okay.
there's information and email and things like that.
Okay, so Pat, you've been involved in this process of either using medical marijuana or, assisting others in using medical marijuana for how long?
Officially around 12 years, like I said, since my dad got, was diagnosed with cancer, and, I've always, I've used it to a limited extent before that, kind of to treat symptoms of anxiety and things like that in myself, and then watched my family use it for some other reasons, and then when my dad got sick.
I got you. So it's been about 12 years. And what I'm trying to do now is understand exactly what happened at the Board of Supervisors. I heard first that, all grows other than 10 by 10, hidden from sight, with the exception of WHAM, were banned. Then I heard that, no, there are four other areas where people can still grow, or favored cultivators who are allowed. What actually was the result of the vote?
The confusion of that probably comes from about just to go back to the kind of the beginning of the recent saga, is that there was about a year and a half ago, the county passed a new cultivation ordinance that was based on parcel size, zoning, and had a lot of conditions in it of what would constitute an acceptable grow or not. And then that, in some people's eyes, was an invitation to a lot of growers from around the state who saw this as a place that was one of the most lax or loosest regulations. And so that, in the county's eyes, attracted a lot of bad actors who were, you know, causing a...
Let me interrupt you here. I know the county always has its little story, and people like Zach Friend and other, you know, police department rejects, or, you know, folks who are from the police department, I reject them for sure. Probably the police department exalts them. There's always a, you know, a, oh, it smells bad. Oh, it's environmentally degrading. You know, oh, you know, they're a bunch of profiteers. And some of these criticisms may have some merit. But in your eyes, as an individual who's been around, has the increase in growers actually had specific bad effects that require any changes other than, let's say, perhaps enforcing the existing regulations?
I feel that if they were to actually enforce the existing rules that they have on the book, almost like always, there's more than enough laws for government to do whatever it needs to do.
Now, they passed, as you know, taxes that are being challenged by Mike Boyd, because, you know, they're claiming that medicine cannot be taxed. That's Boyd's argument. And measures, what, L and K, or whatever the hell they were at the last election, passed that. And they have money to go out and enforce existing laws if they want to. I guess one question, I got really two questions, but let me begin with the earlier question again. They, you know, the Sentinel trumpeted that there, now we have another, it's almost a double number of illegal growers. Does the word illegal mean, as it does, for example, in downtown Santa Cruz, they're sitting next to a building and therefore they're against the law, they're sleeping at night if they're homeless, therefore they're against, in other words, the laws that are ridiculous, or are there real problems that have been created in your, not the county's eyes, but in your eyes?
In my eyes,
yes.
Any real problems that have been created are more to do with prohibition and people hiding out and not being subject to just the normal standards that we have. People who are isolated into a black market have to, A, hide, B, provide for their own security, and then also try to get it while it lasts, so to speak, because there's nothing promised.
Well, let me ask you, though.
So I feel like, yes, there is a small amount of actors, very small percentage, who are doing some things that are...
And I want to know specifically, because I don't like the vagueness that I hear from the Sentinel and from the county, what are these specific problems that require us to fund a bunch of cops or regulators to run out there and deal with even these people who are, for one reason or another, doing, quote, bad things? What specific bad things have you seen that you don't like, if that's the case?
One thing is that we're in the midst of a historic drought, and people are pumping large amounts of water out of streams that otherwise may still have a trickle in them. That's, in some cases, a legitimate concern. Also, people have been cutting down trees to, you know, make clearings to get sunny spots on in some of the mountains, and that also in some cases has been a problem. Me personally would like to put that in context of all other industries, which I feel like really outweigh cannabis in what environmental destruction and impact that they're having. I mean, you just look at the industrial agriculture in this county and measure that against what has been happening.
Yeah, I'd like you to comment on that specifically. I mean, I've looked at, you know, all this statewide calling for conservation and cutting back of water mandatorily by Governor Brown, but meanwhile the almond and the pistachio growers are just going to town, you know, and the walnut growers are going to town. Huge amounts of water being used in order to, you know, increase their profits for foreign sales. What's happening in this county specifically that involves either environmental degradation or water abuse that doesn't involve cannabis that you're talking about in terms of industrial agriculture?
Yeah, I mean, industrial ag, I mean, there's people who could speak at length of what monocropping, the impact that monocropping has on large areas, and the impact that using synthetic fertilizers has on the soil health, and then the runoff of those fields, and then also you get into some of the nasty pesticides that have been and are still being used, methyl bromide for one in the strawberry fields. And these things, even though we seem to be right on par, if not a little ahead in our environmental protection in this area compared to other areas, I still think it lacks a lot. and the whole for-profit industrial model, when it's applied to anything, tends to produce environmental destruction and the destruction of the people.
But getting very specific in terms of what particular other agricultural products you think are much more abusive in terms of the criticism leveled against marijuana cultivators, what particular crops are you specifically referring to?
Strawberries with the pesticides used, methyl bromide. I think that artichokes also is heavy pesticide use. And then the berry crops, like raspberries and that you see all over, are also, a lot of them are heavy with the pesticide use, but my expertise is really, really cannabis, and, you know, I'm sure that someone else could fill in a lot more of the story of what the particulars of industrial ag in this county are doing. But, I mean, when you compare that to what is happening in cannabis,
see, that's exactly what I want to do, because we've been hearing these terror stories, whether it's to ramp up the drug war and criminalize marijuana, or to, you know, expand police departments, start a war on terror, ramp up foreign wars, you name it. The issue are, for me, involves the facts, what's really going on, not the fantasies or the special interest groups, whether they're munitions makers or pesticide makers or freaky folks who are concerned, you know, have prohibitionist religions that want to criminalize things for everybody else. I mean, there are some legitimate concerns, I mean, in terms of patients getting their medicine, which, for example, I didn't see the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, or I guess that's a group you were working with at one point, Pat, is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm also involved with them.
Right, I didn't see them, for example, particularly concerned about demonstrating regularly an interest in low-income marijuana being available to folks on a really clear, specific basis. That's my interest. I work with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I personally believe, I think there's some just different perspectives on this enough, but I personally believe that, you know, until the government makes, you know, it puts aside the rules that say you got to pay $100 for this, a little than $100 for your card, and $100 for your recommendation, and then go to some dumpy dispensary, and maybe you can't afford to be in a collective, and you need to go buy a medication. There should be requirements that dispensaries and maybe even cultivators provide some marijuana for low-income folks. What's your position on that?
Oh, I'm 100% in favor of that. We've thrown around a tidying idea in things, and you know, and on that issue too, I completely agree that any of the cannabis businesses or dispensaries in town should be mandated to give a large percentage away for free.
What's the county law on that? I mean, when I talked to Leopold, 5 years ago, and they're putting an earlier law in, that was kind of on hold because of state and federal court back and forths. But is there currently any kind of requirement, or even, is there a requirement, or was there a requirement that was previously, that was removed from county law, that required either dispensaries and or cultivators to provide low-income access?
Yeah, I'm not aware of, there may have been something that was like that in the past, but as far as I know, there is no requirement for any dispensary in town to give a certain percentage away.
What's the actual practice? What's the actual practice of the dispensaries in town? I mean, of course, we have only, what, I guess we have two dispensaries now, Greenway and another one.
Dispensaries, for the most part, are businesses in the sense that they buy for one, sell for two kind of situation. I can't speak specifically for all of them, but just in general, that's my layman's take on the thing. The important part and why I feel like this referendum and what the intention of Prop 215 was that people wouldn't be left to have to get their medicine through purchasing it, and the point of collective cultivation was that so people could band together and provide medicine in outside of a commercial model.
How effective actually is that in our county? I mean, we have WAM.
Well, I mean,
wait a minute.
It's very
We have Wham, who is, you know, is always being touted as the poster child of all this stuff, but they serve a small number of people, relatively, 200 or 300 people at most, is my understanding. What about other collectives? How many are there in the county? How many do they serve? Any information on that, Pat?
So a collective could be anything from 2 or 3 people who stand together to collectively garden for their needs, or up to the dispensaries that you see with thousands and thousands of patients.
I'm not talking about a dispensary that's in it for profit and is only a collective in the most, you know, let's avoid the, you know, the criminalization bullshit, which I agree with, and I fought for that too, and I fought Bob Lee on that when he was defining dispensaries as non-collectives and going after people like Roger Mensch. But I'm wondering, in actual practice, real collectives that aren't in it as a profiteering agency, how many of those are there in existence? How many people do they serve in Santa Cruz County?
It's hard to get an official number of that, but I think that a lot of the smallest producers are providing fairly well for a lot of people for no cost at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how it works in, like, my family collective, which is a collective, and you have 4 members right now, my family, and no one, it's all non-commercial.
Right. My question, though,
no one could measure how many of us are out there and how much we're actually how many people we're actually providing for. And that is part of the nature of housing things.
Well, the real question I have, I'm interrupting you, sorry about that, but I do that, is what percentage of the low-income population is actually served by this? And I know that you probably have no way of knowing, but do you have any sense of whether it's 5%, 50%, 90%? How many people can actually grow their own, and how many people have to resort to essentially profit-making institutions, dispensaries, that aren't really collectives, even though they're protected by the collective fiction?
I would say the vast, vast majority. And the need for low-income medicine is so large, the amount of people that need cannabis but can't use it for the social stigma, or because they're drug tested at their job, or because of this. So I would say less than 1% of low-income people in town are actually provided with enough cannabis that they need.
Is that unique to this county? Are there other counties where you think this is less the case? Let's say like Humboldt County, Mendocino County. Do you have any information about those other places where marijuana is actually, you know, more easily accessible?
Yeah, just my feeling as a member of the cannabis community is that the way that poor people get taken care of is by good-hearted producers. And I would say that but it's not a structural, there's no structure in place to take care of them. Like Wham do their very best, but it's a tiny drop in the bucket. And I would say that in Mendocino, Humboldt, other production hubs, that a lot of people are taken care of just out of the goodness of some producers' hearts. And then there's also small, like family-style collectives or very small collectives that are non-commercial, like I was describing.
What about in Santa Cruz? You say there's only 1% of the people are taken care of. Is that of the low-income folks? Is that your estimate?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that
that's a pretty shit-poor guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the just like our ability as a society to provide things to poor people is, you know, we're very, very lacking in what we provide across the board for the people, for the least among us, and I feel like cannabis is right there with everything else.
Right.
Is that it's
I got you. I agree with you. Let me jump back, though, to the issue that you are actually pushing for, which is that, you know, to, A, get a referendum going on the decision by the Board of Supes. And let's clarify exactly what that decision said. Explain what particularly, you were giving a little history, and I interrupted you with a series of questions, which I appreciate the answers to. I think that's helpful. And Merlin here is in the studio with me, who's a marijuana patient, and who knows, maybe a grower, and who knows, maybe a big-time profiteer. Secretly, you never can tell.
Yeah.
He's also an upcoming radio broadcaster. He's going to have some questions and comments. But I want to find out first from you what this law that has passed would do if your referendum fails.
Well, if our referendum fails, every garden in town or in the county above
beyond 100 square feet, so a 10 by 10, it would be not a criminal violation, but a civil violation of the civil code. And it'll basically be the county planning department that comes by and issues red tags for these gardens.
What would the fines be for that kind of thing?
The fines are what the red tags would run you. I don't know. I'm not a property owner. I've never been red tagged, so that's out of my range. But there's no specific fines attached.
It seems that I'm interrupting you here. It seems that's a very specific something you might want to, you know, let people know, because even though it's not a criminal penalty, it's a penalty that could, you know, reduce people on the borderline into bankruptcy and onto the street, or at least to have no medicine. So I think that kind of thing, information is helpful. If you get that information in the future, let us know about it. But go ahead with what else you're saying. It's a 10 by 10 restriction. Is WHAM excluded from this? Are other growers, certain select, favored, preferred growers excluded?
No, only WHAM is excluded. There was another option of a model ordinance that the board could have voted for that granted the brick-and-mortar dispensaries the ability to grow a few sites and up to, you know, 10,000 square feet or something. And the cannabis community is, you know, in some way glad that that didn't pass, because that made winners and losers, and this unifies people to be able to, stick up for the smaller producers and the people who aren't brick-and-mortar dispensaries.
Now, we had Michael Boyd on the air, who claimed that that alternative actually was a bad alternative because it favored what he called the rice cartel, the rice family cartel. Do you have any comments on that characterization of who controls the marijuana scene here in the Santa Cruz County area?
I really think that the politics that were behind all this are a lot bigger than any individual in town. And I think that what Michael Boyd sees as kind of a conspiracy, I would just see as business as usual, if that makes any sense. Businesses are always going to lobby to get preferential treatment from government, and sometimes it happens, and then it looks like somebody was trying to exclude people intentionally.
Is WHAM getting preferential treatment? Is it exempted from this 10 by 10?
WHAM is technically getting preferential treatment, but I think that they've earned that in many, many ways. But first and foremost, of being kind of the model, when people talk about collectives and use that word, it's because WHAM used that word to protect itself.
So they are getting, WHAM is getting preferential treatment. Are any other groups getting preferential treatment?
No, it's only WHAM.
So WHAM is specifically excluded from the 10 by 10 limits?
Yes.
How is it excluded without exception? It can expand to 1,000 by 1,000, or is it 100 by 100? I mean, what's the limits of WHAM?
I think that they're pretty much given the ability to do what they want, but I think that really somebody from them would be a better person to.
We actually have a WHAM member in the studio. I believe, Merlin, you're a member of WHAM.
Yes, sir, I am.
Get up, belly up to the mic there.
I'm a WHAM member, yeah.
And I know you had some comments and some thoughts, Pat. Merlin here is a broadcaster, is going to be doing a regular show with Dolly, who's also in the studio and retaining a strong silent presence. So there'll be also opportunities for people to call in and talk on their shows as well. Merlin, did you have some thoughts you wanted to pass on?
I am a member of WHAM, and I went to the last WHAM meeting that I went to, and they were talking about that 10 by 10 thing and that they're exempt from it. You know, I'm also a member of the Therapeutic Healthcare Collective and Kind People's Collective. And, you know, when I started, I mean, of course, my mother was also a member of WHAM, and they took great care of her with the compassion program they have. And that's what they call it, the compassion program. And when I go to these other places and I say, do you have a compassion program? They don't. And yep. I thought they were all required to, but they don't. And, you know, the therapeutic health care that's in SoCal, they're the only people that I've gone to that actually give me a gram a week. And yep. It doesn't matter how expensive it costs. It could be $20 a gram, which I think is highway robbery for weed, because it is a weed. But, yep. You know, even the seeds, if you want to, I looked into growing it, and no, I'm not growing it presently, but I wanted to find a specific kind of weed, and it was called Mickey, and they wanted $111 for 5 seeds. And this is pretty much common. So, it, yep. You know, for this to be medically marijuana, you know, one of the things I didn't know that I'd like to ask the caller is, do you know if, because they keep saying it's medical marijuana, is there any move at all in any government agency that wants to make this so, like, Medi-Cal might pay for it?
Because it is. I think that that's waiting on federal legalization. I know that the VA has started to recognize cannabis and will pay for cannabis and some instances, and don't quote me on that, but that's what I think is happening.
No,
but I agree, it's, you know, the need for people to be able to obtain this without a lot of financial resources is huge.
Let me go back, guys, let me go back to the issue that, you know, you are really working on, which is this referendum. The referendum process, you only have a month to get signatures, isn't that right? Or what's the time, what's your time frame for gathering?
We have until May 12th, and we are over halfway to our, we need 7,500 qualified signatures, and we're over halfway with qualified signatures to reaching our goal.
You mean You've actually, I mean, I know I've been part of referendum efforts in the 90s to end the sleeping ban, and we found in the city you had to get almost twice as many signatures to make sure that those that were thrown out, you know, didn't reduce you below the required number. You've actually gone through the signatures and find you have...
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to have the resources to pay professionals to gather the signatures who are doing, they say that they do around 70%. Clearance on things, and they've been checking, and the updates that we've had with them is that we're over halfway with qualified signatures, and they try to get, you know, a good buffer over just to make sure that they hit their mark, because a lot of them are.
So the effect
you know,
of this
trivial reasons, but
the effect of this would be to nullify the decision of the board, or would it be to implement something in its place?
Well, so the referendum freezes the decision of the board, and then we're in the process of trying to draft an initiative that we then gather signatures for, and hope that we could get that onto the June 2016, I think, is the earliest it could go on. But we also are hoping by drafting workable, reasonable regulations that the county, we're also going to try to talk to the county and get them to possibly adopt it without having to run the initiative. So that's kind of the game plan. But the referendum was a necessary step to stop this.
So the goal, Merlin here doesn't understand the goal, but I think the goal, as you describe it, is to stop the most recent decision by the Board of Supes and at least hold things in place under the current earlier law passed a year ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
You understand,
Merlin? No, what is it?
And then replace with an initiative.
Again, I'll repeat it since Merlin still doesn't catch it, that the change that they did on Tuesday was they banned all grows, with the exception of the wondrous Wham. I'm sorry, I'm not so happy that Wham is a privileged grower here, even though they do provide services for their members. And I got a lot of good reason for that. They had absolutely nothing to say when people were starving for marijuana between 2000 and 2005 in the city, when there was no dispensaries available at all. And these great humanitarians who ran their own stuff didn't have a word to say about the many, many other people who are suffering. And they could have stepped up to the plate, and they did not. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm not aware. Did they step up to the plate on Tuesday? Did they oppose this?
Wham does oppose this, and I've heard Valerie say that she doesn't like having preferential treatment.
That's very nice.
I agree at some level that we really need, this is a civil rights issue, and we really need people to step up and make it that kind of
of importance.
Well, it's not just, it's not just, see, it's not just people. It is those who have power. If they are going to use their power to sit in their little castles and run their own rackets and routines and protect their own people but ignore everybody else, I have no sympathy for that particular position. I don't like it. And all this, you know, the amount, it simply becomes a form of corruption as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but I mean, let me, I'll stop inveighing there because I really want to, people to get an understanding. Merlin, do you understand now what the referendum? No, he doesn't. He still doesn't. All right, so Pat, you, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it can be put any more simply. They want to stop the Board of Supervisors' decision to limit grows to by 10 by 10 and return it to the prior situation, which is a little more complicated but does allow a lot of current growers to continue to grow. Is that correct?
Yeah, so a referendum just halts new ordinance that the county has recently passed. It hasn't gone into effect technically yet, and so we're trying to stop it before it ever happens. So in that circumstance, the law would be what it was before for the last year and a half or so, which in my mind is still borderline unacceptable and very complex and excludes a lot of people.
Can you simplify what happened a year ago and what the prior law was? So what happened?
So the prior law was basically that each patient was allowed to cultivate a 10 by 10, and that could be done at their residence or in their name through the collective gardening. And that really is when 215 was crafted, that was kind of the backbone of it, is that people were allowed to go out and cultivate this medicine themselves. So prior to a year and a half ago, if you created a collective, however many members of you had in your collective, you had 100 square feet. So if you had 4 members, you could do 400 square feet or a 20 by 20 area. And the county has now said that you can only have 1 member per parcel, 1 garden per parcel, 1 10 by 10. And so what people are doing for years in this county is forming small collectives or larger collectives and having protection for their growth by the amount of patients they had in their collective. And now that collective gardening is off the table.
Now, it was off the table as of a year ago, or it was off the table because of the most recent?
Well, it was off the table a year ago. That stuff went out, but they replaced it with parameters of how big of a collective garden you could have depending on all sorts of factors, your zoning and your parcel size mainly. And so then that was now replaced with an all-out collective gardening ban where you're only allowed a 10 by 10 per parcel. So it's kind of complex. It sounds like we're going back to how it used to be, which 10 by 10 per patient, but now it's only 1 patient per garden.
Can I ask a question?
So Merlin has a question here.
You know what? When we have that 10 by 10 parcel per patient, what's wrong with that?
Just having 1 10 by 10. I heard the question. Sorry,
I have a 10 by 10 parcel.
If I heard the question right, it was what's wrong with just having 1 10 by 10?
Yeah, that seems like that's not enough for per patient.
And that that's how the old law used to be, and that was seen as people could, in effect, kind of have real. If you had a collective with 10,000 members, like some of the bigger brick and mortar collectives around, then you could have very large gardens, which the county didn't want to have.
It seems like that's what the corruption
and then in. So now they've limited it to just 1 10 by 10, so you can't collectively garden together.
Let me ask you this. Again, I would like to know not what the county's fears are, but prior to 2014, were there huge gardens that were suddenly appearing or any kind of abuses that justified this 2014 change a year ago?
No. In my mind, I would say absolutely not, especially in the context of all the what everyone else does to make a buck in the world. You know, in capitalism, there is
there's serious costs that aren't factored into things. And I think that cannabis is just like that. There is definite concerns to how it's produced and what's the cost, the real cost of that. But I think it's laughable to point the finger at cannabis when everything else is happening.
We're talking with Pat, who is working with the following groups, Responsible Cultivation Santa Cruz, as well as the Cannabis Advocates Alliance. Am I right with
that? Yep, that's correct.
And if anybody wants to call in with a question, we do have one open line or a comment, 469-3119, 469-3119. Interviews that I had scheduled to be played, I'm going to kick ahead until Sunday. So actually, I guess Keith, who put you in touch with me and is one of your petitioners, he did an interesting interview, which I'm going to be hoping to play on Sunday, but it looks like we're going to run out of time, and I think this is an important discussion we're having, so I'm going to continue having it with you, and we're going to educate Merlin on all the details, and Merlin has another question. Remember, the number again, if you had a question or a comment, is 469-3119. We're talking, you want to give your last name, Pat, or not?
It's Pat Malo, M-A-L-O. I'm not afraid anymore. So
Pat, can I ask a question?
Yes, you can.
Can I ask you a question, Pat?
Go ahead.
Yep.
You know, I wanted to know one thing. At the last meeting I went to, WAM meeting, was Val was saying that they want to make a new law, something about that, that each collective that's out there can only have three growers supplying them. And what Valerie said was, that seems to be the new gold rush these days, is everybody wants to be one of those three growers for the collective. So you got any comment on that?
Yeah, that was what I was trying to explain. It was kind of complex, is that there were two options for the county to vote on. And one of those options was to exclude everyone except three, limited, it swung between two and four grow sites for each of the already existing brick-and-mortar dispensaries in the county. And the county didn't opt to go for that, and they opted to exclude everyone except for WAM.
So I got a question. I've got a question for you about the process.
That makes sense. She was talking about it because it was an option, and it was what we thought was going to happen. We've been organizing to the CAA had been organizing against that, as what we thought was coming down to us for, 3 months or so, or a little more than that now. We were surprised to see that everyone was excluded.
Pat, what was the debate on that? I mean, I heard some of the discussion last Tuesday on this issue. What I noted, or I guess it was a week ago Tuesday. What I noticed was that, first of all, they didn't allow you to remove it from the consent agenda as a separate item. And second of all, they allowed you only a minute each. Is that accurate?
Yep, that was when they came on the second voting. To get it, and they didn't move it off the consent to the regular, and or the regular to consent. I get confused sometimes. And they did limit it to, it might have been 1 minute. I think it might have been 2 minutes, but they did limit it from the normal 3 minutes that people got for the beginning commentary.
You know, the question I have is to have everybody talking about the item, and there was quite a number of speakers, but have it still on the consent agenda means it gets no individual attention and has to be voted up or down. Now, at the Board of Supervisors, it was my understanding, and I don't know how much of a Board of Supervisors habitué you are, but it was my understanding that the Board of Supervisors allows members of the public to remove items from the consent agenda themselves if they wish. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, that was our understanding, and that's why we asked.
We
were surprised too.
Yeah, it seems to me the whole process of its removal was illegal. That is to say, it violated their own rules and practices. Who initiated that? Was it Susan Mariello? It seemed the highly paid CAO seemed to be manipulating the entire process, or was it some board member?
No, it was her, as I remember, definitely.
Wow.
So yeah, she seems to run out of patience with this issue.
Else,
not me. So are your organizations taking any action to challenge this the board action in court, as well as this do it through the referendum?
We had definitely talked about that. That one of the ways when we were strategizing of what we should do, one of the ways that we talked about holding this up was a
was a lawsuit. And we're still exploring that. I know that we have a few lawyers and other people.
See, as a member of the public, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, who's engaged in, I'm interested in seeing greater public participation and access to the whole discussion, whatever item comes up. This is a slap in the face and a kick in the ass, and frankly, a ream up the groin of the whole public process. I mean, this is what the city council did under Ryan Coonerty. What it did was, he's now on the board of supervisors. He was then mayor. He unilaterally changed the process so that members of the public could not withdraw items from the consent agenda. But I understand there wasn't even a discussion of a change. Mariello, are you telling me that she's simply said, no, remove it from the consent. You can't be removed from the consent agenda. We're going to go ahead with this. I mean,
as I recall, that's how it happened.
I'm going to have to review that. That's outrageous. I mean, I think not just on this issue, but for the basis of the, in the interests of the community generally, she needs to be, frankly, she needs to be fired and replaced.
And she seems
you know,
to have an awful lot of power for someone who wasn't elected.
Everybody who is, the powers in this city and county come from those, Merlin, who are not elected. Elected people don't have power in this community. The people who have the power are the staff that run the stuff through them that they rubber stamp. That's who has the power. And she's the most highly, she has over $500,000 in salary benefits and pension, if you want to look at her, what she gets for, you know, what she does. We're talking with Pat Mallow again. We have about, I'm going to have to end this pretty quickly, Pat. I do appreciate your, you know, giving us what you've got, and I encourage you, actually, I think you guys should get a radio show on Free Radio and put out regular information about this, and talk about how other counties, particularly other states who've already legalized this, have dealt with this. And you know, there are shows you can call in on Free Radio, but we need people to join the Free Radio Collective. So I encourage you to, funnel a little of your business our way, if you see what I mean.
No, and I've been a Free Radio listener, and actually my friend had a Pirate Schmucks radio program on it for a long time, a kind of punk rock show, and I've appeared on that, and so I'd love to get down in the little studio you guys got, and, you know, if you want to talk about this more, I'd love to come on yours, but I think that
sure. I mean, you're invited.
Great for us to get our own thing going. I think.
Yeah. I mean, you're invited to both do that, to come on my show, which can I come back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning until 1 o'clock. Merlin has a show coming up. Merlin and Dolly both have a show coming up on Tuesday, I guess it is, at what, 9 o'clock is the, when you start?
9 to 11, but it might be 8 to 11. We're still working out the details.
Right, but Tuesday. And also, you can yourself get a radio show. You just have to kick down $30 a month to pay, or $35.
Yep.
I'm not in dues, so do it. And frankly, we're on the edge of disappearing. We can't. We're about to be evicted from this place because they're evicting everybody from our studio area probably by June 1st. And the transmitter, we need a transmitter site. If any of your members have a place where we can put up an antenna, I know that sounds a little iffy perhaps, but we've never been prosecuted. We've been raided once recently in the last decade. But we need a place to put up an antenna somewhere in the Santa Cruz greater area. So if you have any ideas, we're going to go off the air shortly, and then we'll go off the stream because we don't have a studio either. So, you know, we have about a month left of a really solid radio time throughout May, and after that, it is really uncertain what's going to happen. It looks like we'll lose the studio, and after that, we may lose, or even before that, we may lose the transmitter site. I'm gonna end the conversation with that, unless you want to have the last word on this.
I'd just like to also say that I'm standing outside of a Reform CA meeting. It's about a discussion about the state legalization stuff that's probably going to happen in 2016, and I feel like it's really important for all of us in the medical cannabis scene to watch this really closely and participate as much as we can, because in a lot of the states we see that legalization actually becomes a threat to the people's rights that they have established under the medical system.
And Pat, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to come on the air maybe on Sunday and talk about that issue, which is a separate issue but a very important one. I mean, I know there are at least four separate initiatives that are being pushed for how legalization should happen in California, and maybe you can discuss them if you want to come into the studio or you want to call in on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I'd love to come down into the studio and do it that way. It's a little more personal and fun. And I'm local and close. So, yeah, if you guys want to do that.
I do. I want to do that. Give me a call at 423-4833. That's for any of the listeners. The number anyone can reach me at is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. It's also the line for the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom group that I work with. Give me a call and we'll arrange it, or, you know, I'll supposed to meet you, and then I'll drag you into the studio by your heels with your blindfold on so you don't know where everybody else knows where you are, but you can claim you don't. So
Yeah, awesome.
Hey, Pat, thank you for calling in.
Well, thanks so much, and I'll call this 423-HUFF, right?
Yeah, do that. Leave a message, and I'll get back to you.
Great. I'll do that right now. And thanks so much, Merlin, everyone else
there. Thank you, Pat.
I try, you know, thanks for having me for so long. I do my best to explain all this stuff.
You're doing great, and I thank you for calling, and we'll talk more.
Awesome. Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye. And for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to attempt to orient Merlin and Dolly on a little bit of what's cooking in the studio before Uncle Dennis comes storming in, as he often does, from The Cream to the Dregs, which is the next show. So I'm going to play a little more from Phoenix, who does a lot of sweet stuff. And let's hear some more from her. And then you'll hear some stuff from the 60s and 70s from Uncle Dennis, as well as the Earth First Report. And whatever other thoughts he has. But first, this call. You're on Free Radio with Robert and Merlin and Dolly.
Yeah.
Robert, Merlin, whoever, as previously announced, I will not be in tonight.
Uh-oh. Well, you're finished. We'll be going for another 3 hours then, Dennis. Actually,
well, just play music for 3 hours. Be my guest.
I'll sing. How's that? Listen, thank you. We will put on your show. Anything else? Any other thoughts for your loyal listeners?
Just that I will probably not be in next week either.
Okay. I want to remind you that Merlin here would love to talk to you and has been waiting anxiously for your call. So
I'm extremely busy, and I will be leaving on Sunday morning. So
okay, well, perhaps
apologize to Mr. Merlin.
He's listening. So
yeah, listen, I accept it.
And thank you, thanks, Dennis, and we'll hope that you don't disappear into the wilderness, old man.
There are many other programmers who probably have at least as much expertise as I do in how to run a studio.
I don't know. You're the grand old man, but thank you, and we'll put something on.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And Dennis has a number of old shows, one of which is going to come on shortly. Again, if anybody wants to comment on this show, if you want to be on the air, if you want to pass on concerns you've had, things you've seen, particularly looking for videos of behavior of police downtown that are less than stellar, if you see that happening and you think it merits community concern, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you don't want to go through us, post it on YouTube. Post it and go to Santa Cruz Indie Media. Write about it. It's really important. A lot of articles, which I did not have that time to get to or didn't take time to get to today, talk about the kinds of really outrageous and frightening police abuses that are happening around the country and that are only exposed because of the